Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Korea's notorious wind has been a defining feature of the Pyeongchang Olympics, as has, of course, the combined North and South Korean team. But here's another thing that may make these games stand out as historians look back: the unprecedented role of robots. South Korea is using this event as an opportunity to showcase its global leadership in robotics, with robots doing everything from carrying the torch to cleaning the floors. Organizers say there are 11 different types of robots, 85 individuals in all, who are helping out at the games. Emily Machar has written about the robots of the Pyeongchang Olympics for Smithsonian Magazine, and she joins me now via Skype. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Those watching the opening ceremonies, on TV at least, were treated to a huge swarm of drones forming the Olympic rings in the sky, but that's not actually part of this 85 robots that organizers are talking about. Even before we got to the opening ceremonies, though, there was a robot that got to carry the torch for a leg. Tell us about Hubo.
Yeah, so Hubo is a pretty impressive robot. Hubo actually drove a car in the ceremony, carrying the torch, and then he got out, he walked. Holding the torch, he punched a hole through a wall to demonstrate his rescue capacities, because he's a rescue robot, and then he handed the torch through the wall to his creator.
Definitely makes for a little bit of drama. I'm kind of surprised, actually, they didn't have Hubo in that final leg of the torch, carrying it right up to the cauldron there with as much fun as that was.
Right.
This past week, robots actually had their own athletic event, kind of off to the side of these Olympics, but they had a skiing competition for robots. Tell us about that. Who participated, and what did they actually have to do?
Yeah, so there was, like you said, a ski competition only for robots, and they had to be, I believe, 50 centimeters tall, and they were doing a slalom, and they had to stand up by themselves the whole time, and they could have no human control besides, listening to the initial signal. There were, I believe, 8 or 10 teams participating who are from local universities and also some local industry.
There's great video of that event online, and all of these robots are fairly short and squat, and they've got their skis on kind of spread wide for balance, and they actually put coats and pants on. I mean, they look like 4 or 5 year olds who've never skied before trying to ski through these red and blue flags.
One of the great things about the Olympic robots is so many of them are actually just incredibly cute, you know, very sort of humanoid, or some of them are animals and just really adorable.
I'm talking with Emily Machar. She's written about the robots of the Pyeongchang Olympics for Smithsonian Magazine. As you mentioned, a lot of the robots that are being used are really quite humanoid, and some of them are actually interacting with athletes and visitors at the game. Some of them are actually acting as translators.
Yeah, I believe there are translator robots in all of the major venues. And these robots, they're equipped with a software that can translate between 29 different languages, but these ones are programmed for the event. They're programmed to speak, I believe, 4. So Korean, Chinese, Japanese, and English. And, some of them are humanoid looking, and some of them are made to look like the white tiger mascot of the Olympics.
That raises the question of kind of what is a robot in some of these cases. I mean, some of them do look very humanoid, and others, there are some that kind of look like BB-8. Some of the, I think they're the cleaning robots, the floor cleaning robots, look like that Star Wars BB-8 robot. And then there are others that are actually swimming fish, I guess, just for fun.
Yeah, just to entertain people. The swimming fish, they're really neat. They look like these big gold and different colored koi with lights on their head, and they swim around in a formation in a tank. They're programmed. They have an algorithm that makes them able to all swim together.
And apparently there are also some artist robots. This one, I have to say, you know, if we're going to worry about robots taking our jobs or taking over the world, robots that can serve as artists has to be a little bit scary.
You know, yeah, the painter robots are really cool, and they're not at all humanoid. They look almost like a construction crane or something, but they're programmed to be able to paint based on real-time information. So, you know, they can paint, say, the recent gold medal winner or something like that. And it's quite entertaining to watch. You know, there's something, they're very tall, maybe 20 feet high. And yeah, it's quite impressive.
And where are they painting? If they're painting the latest gold medal winner, where is that painting showing up?
Yeah, they're painting on their murals. They're painting on walls around the Olympics venues.
I guess maybe if they're painting the latest gold medal winner, this is not necessarily high art that we need to worry about the intellectual competition from these robots against human artists.
I think that's fair to say. You know, there are all sorts of artificial intelligences that could make, you know, different kinds of designs, but nothing's ever really going to replace that human element in art. I think it's safe to say. It's pretty safe to say.
My guest is Emily Machar. She's written about the robots of the Pyeongchang Olympics for the Smithsonian Magazine. All of these robots basically are overseen by one person, Professor Oh Jun-ho from the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. What do you know about him and his robotics program? Are these all robots that his group has designed and built?
He oversees all the robotics program of the Olympics. I don't believe that his team designed and built all of them. There's robots from different Korean companies, different Korean universities. Now, Korea is, like you mentioned, a leader in robotics, and there's some interesting reasons why. You know, some is that the country put in a lot of money into technology, into technology education after the war. And then, you know, there's a suggestion that there may be something about the traditional animist religion from many years ago in Korea has predisposed people in the country to feel sort of kindly towards robots. You know, whereas in some Western cultures, there's the idea, oh, robots, they're, you know, they're evil, they're going to come, you know, take our jobs. Whereas I think there may be something in Korean culture that's predisposed to see robots as friendly.
Yeah, they don't have that same concern, I guess, about that, as we were just talking about, whether robots were going to come and take the place of artists or take the place of some other job. You were mentioning how much of a leader they are in robotics. I was really struck by one statistic that in 2016, South Korea sold 41,000 robots. That was half as many as China sold, but they've got 1/25 of the population. So this is a small country that's really, really pushing in this direction. Obviously, as you were just saying, they're not concerned about the human interaction with robots. But I wonder, as they've got all of these people from other nations in Korea and now interacting with all these different types of robots at the Olympics, any sense of how visitors are taking this presence?
Oh, I think it's probably nothing but positive press for the robots at the Olympics. You know, they're all very friendly. Many of them, like I said, are very cute. You know, some of them look like this cuddly white tiger mascot. Some of them look like BB-8. Some of them, you know, look like toddlers on skis. So I think it's a very sort of friendly face of robotics that people are seeing at the Olympics.
And what does South Korea as a nation and as already a leader in robotics perhaps stand to gain from this, what sounds like essentially a goodwill mission of getting people comfortable and interested in robotics while they're at the Olympics?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great promotion for the Korean robotics industry, which is, you know, a leader globally. And there are, you know, they're already, aside from the Olympics, visitors to South Korea can see, for example, robots cleaning the airport, the Seoul airport. And, you know, and I'm sure these companies would love to export more of these robots. And I think the Olympics will help generate some commercial interest in these kinds of robot products.
Well, I, for one, would be more than happy to have a little BB-8 cleaning my house. So
I agree.
I'm all in on that one. Emily Machar has written about the robots of the Pyeongchang Olympics for Smithsonian Magazine. She spoke with us from Hong Kong via Skype. Emily, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.